Sitting at the heart of Europe, Hungary is a captivating country with a history like nowhere else on the continent. It's also one of Europe's best up-and-coming wine tourism destinations. And today I'm joined by Gábor Bonfalvy from Taste Hungary for a fun dive into the Hungarian wine scene. Gábor takes us on a whirlwind tour of some of his country's finest wine regions, explaining along the way how Tokaj wine picked up such a stellar international reputation. Then we turn our attention to the Queen of the Danube, as Gábor gives us the lowdown on life in Budapest and offers up a few tips for experiencing the best of the city. All right, it's time to head to Hungary.
What is the gap between the train and the platform? Let's welcome to Rails, Ales, and Old Towns, Gábor Bonfalvy, co-founder, co-owner, and managing partner of Taste Hungary.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for chatting a little bit about Hungary and the wine and country in general as a destination.
Hungary is all about that. I mean, it's actually a great tourism destination. For me, a great tourism destination has to come with good food and wine, approachable food and wine. And I think Budapest and Hungary has a lot of that to offer.
Before someone has even taken a sip of Hungarian wine, what are some things that we should know about it and why it's special?
Hungary is one of the classic old wine regions of Europe, of the old world. Nevertheless, because of mostly the historic, you know, how history turned out in the 20th century, we sort of got cut off from, the rest of Europe. Now we're part of the EU, we're part of the rest of Europe, and all of this sort of ancient wine and food culture that is connected to Europe in a thousand ways is now being rediscovered. I have the experience, and I've been working with Hungarian wine for 15 years, and I've been a passionate Hungarian wine drinker for 20 years or maybe even more. But it sort of feels like, going up in grandma's attic and finding all these treasures that are just extremely valuable. So this is sort of the philosophical approach. And then I guess a little bit more straightforward approach is that we have white wine, we have red wine, we have rosé, we have sweet wine, the sweet wine of Tokaj. So whatever you like, we have it. We have a lot of indigenous varieties that you will never taste anywhere else. Furmint, Háslevelő, Vulcanus, Zeus, Kékfrankos, there's a long list of dozens of indigenous varieties. So it's unique, I guess. And that's the great varieties. And then if you look at the soil, about maybe almost 50% of this country has volcanic soil. And if you look at the wine map of the world, you'll realize that some of the most exciting wines, at least for me, wine is subjective, so speaking for myself and many other wine lovers in the world, many of the great wines of the world come from volcanic regions, and half of our country is volcanic, so we have unique varieties, unique soil, unique language, unique history, so, I mean, it's all of that.
So safe to say, there's nothing like Hungary.
That's very safe to say. for the good and the bad.
Today, we're going to focus on the good.
We only focus on the good at Taste Hungary. It's a company policy.
Now, somebody who's come to Europe a couple times, let's say, whether they're a big wine lover or just a casual fan, and they've visited some of the premier, big name, A-list destinations, what sort of things, if we're heading to Hungary, what sort of things, might surprise them or is a little different?
Most of our guests are really surprised by the quality and the diversity of flavors and wines that we have here. Most of our customers are first comers to Hungarian wine, because just like you said, people typically would go to France, Spain, Italy first, and then, they will think about another destination. And that's when Hungary comes to mind, if they are thinking about a European destination. About 70% of our production is white wine, 30% is red. The diversity, the different styles, heavy, light, rosé, people don't expect that from such a small country. A few sort of key points why Hungarian wine is also, you know, remarkable. We are in a cooler continental climate. We are landlocked. If you go a little further north, you're going to end up in a, you know, vodka and beer drinking countries. So we are at the northern edge of the winemaking world. So this cool climate results in wines with crisp acidity, so fresh, refreshing wines, fruity wines, where the fruitiness is preserved because we don't get that much sunshine like, you know, somebody in the Mediterranean countries would get. So fruity, acidic, and in many cases, not as full-bodied as, you know, what people are used to from Bordeaux, from some of the key Italian regions, California, and so on, South America. People who are looking for something different, they are extremely pleasantly surprised.
The Tokaj. It's a rock star in your world.
Tokaj is a rock star. We're learning to deal with this, you know, after communism. And you know, it's a heritage that goes back to, you know, 13, 1400s. It's been a huge deal. It's been Tokaj is famous for the dessert wine, the Osu or the Samorodny style wines. Those are the flagship styles. You know, just in parentheses, I do have to say that today and historically speaking as well, 50% of the Tokaj production was always dry, and it is as well today, 50% sweet. And we make both of those from white grapes, and both of them are very good quality. Tokaj has been sort of the point of reference for sweet wine production around the world for centuries. You know, it is the first delimited, classified wine region of the world, going back to 1737. So Porto and Tokaj were the two first delimited wine regions in the entire world. Both of those are classic sweet wines in the world. Afterwards, you know, a bunch of other wine regions came in, but even when it came to naming their wines, many times they called it, you know, it's a port, it's a Tokaj, because that's where everybody was looking at. Yeah, we don't do a Hungarian wine tasting without adding a dry and a sweet Tokaj in. And they are both amazing. The key variety of Tokaj is a grape called Furmint, F-U-R-M-I-N-T. Furmint is a late ripening variety. It's prone to the noble rot, the shriveling, the botrytis that happens in some of the sweet wine regions. It's a tannic grape. It has these tropical aromas. And you can just imagine that the nobility, because this, you know, Tokaj was always a wine for the rich. Back in the day, in the 1700s, was the wine of the Russian and the Polish, German, British, you know, aristocrats. It's just sort of amazing that these really exotic tropical fruit, mango, these kind of flavors come out of grapes, and they come out of a region that is so far away, you know, from anything Mediterranean and tropical. So it's a magical wine and region.
Even the Pope was in on it.
Absolutely. Thomas Jefferson, you know, Louis XIV, everybody was on it. I think it was the 1600s, alchemists came to Tokaj because the, you know, people were thrilled by the golden color of the wine. And they came to Tokaj to analyze the wine because they wanted to turn it into gold. I mean, people were going crazy about it. But I mean, even today, I mean, the quality is amazing. Yeah, sweet wine is going through a bit of a crisis everywhere in the world.
When you say it's in crisis, you mean popularity?
100 years ago, sweetness was something special. Now, sweetness is actually all over the place. So when it comes to wine, most people want something crisp, fruity, tannic, but not sweet. And Tokaj, you know, the reason why Tokaj is great is actually because of the balance. There's acidity, fruitiness, tannins. So it's a sweet wine, but it's an extremely complex wine. It's also great in cocktails. It's actually great company to some of the Asian dishes, Indian food, Sichuani food, you know, really spicy food. With aged cheeses, blue cheese, it's a great company. If we make like a nice festive meal. You know, goose liver, foie gras would be an appetizer. And with that, a glass of Tokaj is perfect.
The region would definitely be a decent place to spend a couple of days.
Or a lifetime.
That's a recommendation.
Tokaj is a region in northeastern Hungary. There are about 6,000 hectares of planted vineyards there. It's all white grapes. And there are 27 villages and towns that are part of the region. One of them is Tokaj. Tokaj used to be the commercial center of the region because it's on the river. It's at the confluence of two rivers, the Tisa and Bodrog rivers. So it was very convenient to carry the wine away on river. There was railway as well. And if you cross the river, you hit the road to Poland and Russia. So that was the main, you know, trading center. Today, that's not the case anymore. It's still a beautiful little town, but it's definitely not. There's no trading center today. It's the town and the region is named after it. It's not a grape. Some people think it's a grape, but it's not.
So we know the rock star, but if you had to mention one other area that, you know, somebody's coming to Hungary and they're in Budapest, then where was one other place?
Hungary has 22 different wine regions. Some are tiny, some are bigger. Badacsony is one of the smaller ones. It's located in northwestern Hungary, north of a lake called Lake Balaton. And the northern side, almost all across, and we're talking about like 70, 80 kilometers length, is all volcanic. And Badacsony is one of the subregions in the northern side. When you go there, first of all, what grabs you is the landscape. The Badacsony region has about a dozen volcanic hills, extinct volcanic hills. And, you know, these are, I don't know how many millions of years old. So the sand, you know, sort of got blown away around them. And they are sticking up like pyramids, like the Maya pyramids, you know, totally dark, black basalt rock. Some are really steep. Others are more like triangular looking. It's an amazing region. And if we're looking for uniqueness, Badacsony and Badacsony whites are amazing. Good acidity. It's, again, a cooler climate. The volcanic soil enhances the acidity. The main variety there is Olasz Riesling. The second main, let's say, would be maybe Rhine Riesling, which is, well, German variety, but we also have some of it. And then we have some obscure ones like Rózsakő, Kéknyelű, Zeus, Vulcanus. So yeah, Badacsony, because of the landscape, because of the beautiful wines, there are a lot of great restaurants, incredible panorama, you know, looking at the hills, looking, you know, from the hills to the lake. It's a very unique, you know, climate. The lake has this sort of a warming effect on it, on the region. And then the volcanic soil, the unique varieties, and of course, the people who work hard on this, make it very special. The lake is really amazing. I do prefer to go there sort of either before the season, so before school is out, or after school is in, early September, because then, I mean, Hungarians, you know, love that lake. It gets pretty crowded during the summertime. That's a big recommendation. You can take boats. There are boat rides running across the lake, or just, you know, going on like these panorama cruises. Yeah, you can't really go wrong there. But go on the north, the northern side. That's still better because then you can hike up the hills. There are a lot of wine cellars open. Have a glass of wine, enjoy the view, and then, you know, gather your strength to go to the next one.
Budapest. What do you love about living in the city?
I never get bored of crossing the Danube. The Danube cuts the city in two, Pest and Budaside. And in the late 1800s, I'm not sure if it was a single person, but or, you know, the general idea was that we need to build the most glamorous city east of Vienna and west of Moscow. And this was the vision that you know, these guys created or came up with, well, now 150, almost 200 years ago. And honestly, this dream, you know, has come true. So it's a really grand city, big, you know, avenues, beautiful bridges, and then, you know, the big hills on Buda side. It's a large city. It's a walkable city. It's a city that can handle crowds, and you don't feel like sort of, you know, over touristic or stuff like that.
Budapest at night, when the bridges are lit up, there's boats coming under, lights are shining off the Danube. Mm-hmm. That can compete with anybody in Europe.
Any time of the day, it's really beautiful. That's, you know, one thing I never get sick of. But also, you know, it's a big city, 2 million people, so it's big, but it's not 10 million. So that's also sort of nice. It's very international. You can get any kind of food here. There's a big Chinatown. I think we have the best Chinese food in Europe, and actually, we have the biggest Chinese community in Europe. There's a fairly big Chinatown here with a lot of restaurants. There's beautiful architecture, a lot of history. Also, it's located in, you know, in the center of the country, which is a big, practically a big wine region. So you get in your car in about 40 minutes, you are in a wine cellar. It's also easy to get away from.
It bears repeating about Budapest that it is two cities on either side of the Danube.
Yeah, the first brick bridge of the city was only built in, I think, 1844 or so. The chain bridge, actually designed by a British architect. And now we have, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 bridges. Some are railway, some are, you know, not connecting the two sides. Yeah, historically speaking, these cities were two varieties.
Do you notice much difference between the two?
Absolutely. Geographically speaking, Buda is very hilly and Pest is fairly flat. The hills on the Buda side hide these beautiful, you know, spas and the thermal water that comes from them. Not all, but some of the better spas are on the Buda side. Buda is a little calmer, a little less people. And then Buda is, you know, more business, more restaurants, more bars, more parties, more tourists. I'm sorry, Pest.
Where's your favorite bath?
My favorite bath is, in Hungarian, it's called Lukács. In English, it would be called Lucas. And it dates back to the, as early as the 1800s, the current architecture. And then the previous architecture, God knows, because it was actually used by the Roman Empire already. It's a very old one. And the water comes straight from, you know, from the soil. It's about, I guess, 75% locals, 25%, you know, tourists who go there. I really like the water there. It's very strong. The rooms are fairly small, so they fill with steam. And it's the best way to sort of forget, you know, about everything else outside. We also have, Budapest has a lot of beautiful pools for doing sports as well. So there's a big island on the Danube called Margaret Island. And there are two big pool establishments there. One of them is exclusively for sports.
Water polo popular in Hungary?
Yeah, I think that's the most successful team sport in the country. Soccer is more popular, but we are definitely not as good at soccer as we are at water polo. I mean, the Golden Water Polo team won gold medal at the Olympics 3 consecutive times in the early 2000s. And even, I mean, today they are very good as well. So that's very popular. Our soccer team is getting better, but they need to win something first before I give them, you know, the credit and the benefit of the doubt.
Budapest is famous for these grand cafes that can compete with the grand mm-hmm. cafes in Vienna. Obviously, both being a part of the Austro-Hungarian, mm-hmm. you know, there was that tie there mm-hmm. that binded the cities for so long. What's your favorite cake at a cafe and where are you having it?
We do have a lot of grand cafes. It's a big part of our attraction, both for visitors and also for locals. We have a lot of them. So, you know, everybody gets a seat there. If I have to pick one, my favorite one would be Central Cafe. Just to make things more confusing, there's a Central Cafe house in Vienna as well. I much prefer the one in Budapest. The Central Coffee in Budapest has a full menu. They have very good food, a decent wine list. And my favorite cake there would be Esterházy. Esterházy cake is one of our classic layered cakes. The most well-known Hungarian layered cake is the Dobos cake, chocolate layers, and then caramel top. That's very well known. The second one, which is more well known here in Hungary and actually Eastern Europe, is the Esterházy cake. Esterházy is a aristocratic family, and one of their chefs invented this. It was actually invented in Vienna for a Hungarian family. It is a true Austro-Hungarian creation, and it is actually served all over the former Austro-Hungarian Empire, especially in Vienna and Budapest. The Viennese and the Hungarian coffee houses have such a different atmosphere. I like both of them. I mean, I'm not saying one is better than the other. The Viennese have always been there. They didn't have, you know, the interruption of communism. So they are more casual. People go there and just, you know, have a quick coffee, have a quick meal. And for Hungarians, it's more of an occasion. And we're just very happy to have them back because, you know, during communism, they closed a lot of these because they were sort of a social place where people could talk. And actually, many of our revolutions started in coffee houses. So why not just close them?
Anytime people are hanging out in coffee shops, they're going to get ideas, maybe.
and you know, coffee houses back in the days, 150 years ago, at the turn of the century, you know, 120 years ago, they were a very modern establishment, almost like what people would use. You know, we used to have internet cafes, and we have, you know, now, you know, chain like Starbucks where people go to work. So these, you know, originally speaking, these coffee houses, both in Budapest and Vienna, these were many times working establishment for writers and a bunch of other, you know, trades people. As a nice addition to the coffee house culture, now we have the ruin bars, typical to Budapest. They were created in these abandoned buildings, started in the old Jewish district where there were a lot of abandoned buildings, and they started out of pop-up bars, but then they turned into these massive bars, sometimes multiple levels, where a lot of young people hang out.
Young people or people young at heart.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they're still going strong.
They are going strong. Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a few years. It's been a few years since I've been in Budapest, but definitely spent a night at the ruined bars. And yeah, it's like nothing else. It's like these just slapped together, interesting things in an empty space. And then it's so popular now, like we're not changing it. Is there any little secret you share, your personal favorite restaurant, favorite neighborhood to stroll through?
I've been really enjoying the, there's a street on the Pest side called Falk Miksa, and it's full of antique stores. It's very near the Danube, you know, between the Parliament and Margaret Bridge. I enjoy going to antique shops, even if I'm not buying anything. I'm usually not buying anything, but I like to look. We've been exploring this neighborhood because we are trying to come up with a new tour, an evening, you know, history and the wine walk and food walk. And I found a very nice bar there, which I knew about, but I rediscovered it. It's called Tokaj Bar. And it's one of these old time stand still in this place. And it hasn't changed in probably 20 or 30 years or maybe more. And prices haven't changed much either. And so the Tokaj Borozo is a must visit.
Oh, I appreciate that. That sounds like a perfect afternoon. Doing some antique shopping, possibly buying or just shopping, getting inspiration, and then slipping into a cafe where time stands still. That's a perfect transition into Taste Hungry. Your philosophy is to, in case people cannot make it out to the wine country of Hungary, to bring it to them in Budapest. So if you could just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do, and your passion is so inspiring.
Thank you. Well, the company was founded in 2008. My wife, Carolyn, is American. She moved here a few years, you know, prior to that. So I had to show her around. And food and wine was always our, you know, a big connection between us. So by 2008, we thought that, okay, we know a lot. And it took us a long time to sort of understand and discover, you know, the different, you know, intricacies of Hungarian food and wine that we thought, okay, maybe we could make a business from this. And then we made a website, and it was just a sort of started out as a side job. But in a few years, it was a full-time job. And anyway, by now it's sort of, you know, we have a good-sized team, and we do food and wine walks in Budapest. We have a tasting room in Budapest called the Tasting Table, and we have wine tastings every single day at 3 and at 6 p.m. or almost every single day, just Hungarian wine and mostly local grape varieties. Our mission really is to show non-Hungarians the hidden treasures of the culinary and wine culture here, which is really old, really complex, and if you don't speak the language, it's not that easy to understand. So we're going to explain that to you either on one of our food tours, one of our wine tours at our wine shop or wine cellar. Well, one of the things that was sort of always the motivation for us is, you know, people were saying that, oh, I'm going back home and I can't buy this wine. So we actually set up an import company in the United States as well. So we import Hungarian wine there and sell it at tastehungary.us. So we also have an EU web shop. We are building bridges, really. bridges from and for wine bottles.
I'm coming to Budapest. I can take a walk with Taste of Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to sign up for a tour of Hungary, I can go with you. For how long do those tours last?
We have vacations. I mean, you could take the longest vacation we ever ran was 10 days of just food and wine and, you know, sights and history in Hungary. We have day trips. So since Hungary is not a very big country, if you get in the car, we can pick you up at the hotel at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. sometimes, and we can get to any wine region in 2.5 hours. We can have a beautiful tasting at 11. We can have a lunch with wine at lunchtime. We can have one or two afternoon tastings, and then we'll be back by 8 p.m., you know, at the hotel. Our most popular tours are walking tours. Some go to the central market. Some discover, you know, other areas. And those are four-hour tours. Book online, tastehungary.com. Most of these tours run, if not every day, then, you know, multiple times a week. If you want something longer, you would need to contact us, and we'll set something up.
And then before I leave to the train station, I can stop by the wine shop and grab a bottle or two for the road.
Of course, and some cheese.
Hungarian cheese?
Yeah. And it's actually funny, you know, people say winemakers are eccentric and, you know, all of that. Well, then you haven't met a cheesemaker yet. They are the real eccentric fellows in the best possible way. But anyway, yeah, we do work with Hungarian cheese. Most of the cheese here, we eat fresh. Some of it is like as young as a day old. So, you know, very crumbly, fresh cheese, curd cheese, or how do you call that? Farmer's cheese. But then we also have the, you know, a bit of like the minority that age cheese for 6 months, 12 months, and so on and so on. So yeah, there's a lot of good cheese as well.
And the tastings at the is that something I need to book for that, the tasting table?
Yeah, you can book online, tastehungary.com. The 3 p.m. tasting is called Wine, Cheese, and Charcuterie Tasting. And I guess there's no reason to explain it because it's very straightforward. You're going to get wine, cheese, and charcuterie, five wines, and then, you know, like a beautiful, generous board of local produce and five kinds of wines. And of course, an explanation on from our sommelier on Hungarian cuisine. Well, mostly actually the wine culture, the cheese, and, you know, history and the wines you're tasting. And then if you want to go a little bit more in depth, then our 6 p.m. tasting has eight wines and also some cheese and charcuterie pairings.
Can you take me to like a favorite moment that people have enjoying Hungarian wine?
Yeah, the sweet wine moment when people taste a nice Tokaji. then people say, oh, I don't know, I like dessert wine. Oh, I didn't know sweet wine could be this good. And, you know, the feeling of discovery that they are discovering a totally new wine culture, you know, flavors and combinations and aromas that, and, you know, paired with the names and stories that people never heard of, but yet you have a sip and you said, oh, I should have had this before. So moments like this are really special.
Really appreciate you coming on, telling us a little more about Hungarian wine and why it should be on our radar for European travel. And the next time I'm in Budapest, I'll be swinging by for sure.
You're invited.
What is the gap between a train and a plane?